So, hello everyone, Jean-Philippe, Committee for the Republic of Canada. I'll speak in English. There are some things which will be in French on the board, but pretty much everybody here can get both. So, all right. So, something very important happened this week. But first, 40 years ago, this guy here is an ABBA learner, an economist, whose names still keep popping out here and there in economics classes. In the back there, to the left, there's LaRouche. That's in 1971, so 40 years ago. So he was 47, 48. This was a debate, a very important debate, because it was right after LaRouche's... After one of LaRouche's forecasts became true, where he forecast the destruction of the Bretton Woods system, the destruction of the fixed exchange rate system destroyed by Nixon. And at that time, everybody was saying, LaRouche, crazy, it's not going to happen. We have built-in stabilizers, everything's going to be fine. But what happened, this system was changed. And also the whole set of policies started to change towards monetary policies. And LaRouche pointed what he was doing at that debate, and we have copies of the debate, although there's some parts missing, but the major idea was that you cannot divorce monetary policies from fascism. That is, that even if you have a bunch of economists in a room talking about, you know, reducing, for example, the monetary flow in order to try, for example, reduce the monetary flow, try to create more jobs by reducing wages. The problem is that these policies have a physical implication. And as LaRouche was saying, he says, you want those policies to pass, you want your monetary reforms to pass, you'll need fascism, you'll need dictatorship. And Abba Lerner was saying, you know, I'm a good guy, I love my family, I love people, I'm not an ogre. I don't agree with those people, I don't agree with that time was mentioned the repressive regime in Brazil, which was, I guess, some type of dictatorship. And he was basically defending an idea of trying to create more jobs by reducing wages, which is a very simple mathematic idea that if you pay 10 guys $10 an hour, well, won't you hire 20 people $5 an hour? You know, oh, you sure? That's good. But that's LaRouche kept emphasizing, and he got to the point where Mr. Lerner admitted that in order to, because at a certain point they talk about Hitler and Hjalmar Schacht, so the austerity policies in Germany, and Mr. Lerner said, well, if people had agreed with Hjalmar Schacht, with his austerity policies, Hitler would not have been necessary. That is that Hitler's repressing regime, who actually imposed those economic policies. If you're crazy enough to accept them, then of course you don't need a dictatorship, because you're like your own self dictator. So there's no need for Hitler, but the policies are the same. Policies are economic austerity, fascism, destruction of your physical economy, and that. That debate also created a huge polemic around LaRouche, around his ideas. And we had a massive wave of recruitment in the United States and other countries where people started to study LaRouche, stop being just some angry Marxist, and start thinking on their own, looking into the ideas of the Renaissance, really the greatest ideas to really change the whole, to stop the financial collapse, to change also the culture in which these people were in. And a lot of people were still wondering what the hell was going on. A lot of people were still saying, no, the economy is fine, everything is going to be beautiful, because we have all these economists, they know what they're talking about. But what happened this week, and that's very important, it's going to be key, not just for the United States, but for here too. This is something we have to use, is that one of our candidates, Keisha Rogers, one of our three candidates for Congress, she actually won the Democratic primary in the 22nd district of Texas, and she won big time, like 52% out of three candidates. I'm just going to show her a website quickly, but so there's and because now what's going on now is that you're going to have about 8 months of campaigning in Texas, but also Boston and California, because what Keisha was emphasizing was, she wasn't trying to profile people from Texas, but she kept a national approach, mm-hmm. and saying, you guys want to keep your job in Texas, you want to save NASA, because NASA is in her district. Well, what you're going to have to do is to impeach Obama. And she was clear. I mean, she was all over the place with signs, save NASA, impeach Obama. That was our theme. And we organized very aggressively in the streets, door to door. We even had an astronaut, a guy, this guy's an astronaut, doing door to door, or being ran after by Obama with a hatchet, which obviously got a lot of attention. But that's what was going on. And the Democratic Party, because she was running as a Democrat, Democratic Party was let's just say that they were confused. I'll show you, right, because the only, there were two reactions we got, but the first reaction we got from the Democratic Party was this guy, Doug Blatt, was another guy running for the same position, but he was endorsed by the Democratic Party directly, all the club people endorsed him. And if you go to his website, which is actually the website is very depressing. Right? There's no you can't click on anything, it's just that. Right. And he says, I'm sorry to inform you that we lost. I'm sorry that I was not able to get the word out more. And then he says, the winner, Keisha Rogers, is already claiming on her website that this means that Democrats in District 22 want to impeach the president. And he says, I can't believe that most people who voted for her knew that she wants to do that. I do believe that most of them did not do any research about the candidates before voting. Thank you for your support. Sincerely, Doug Blatt. It's probably taking a lot of
antidepressants.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, this is the kind of comment which is very, very first, very arrogant against the population itself. And the problem with people like Doug Blatt is that these are the part of it's like, because I ran for office in 2006, and there was like eight candidates, and most people don't have any campaign; they just put signs. And they hope that the label of the party will do the job. And even the guy at the NDP, because we had a 2 month period of organizing, and he just waited the last 2 weeks. So I'll just put my pictures of the last 2 weeks, so people remember me more. My signs will be better.
Standing up.
Yeah. But no idea of going to the subway, because there actually was a subway in the area, so there's a lot of people intersecting. No campaign. So a lot of people will, like politics, a lot of politics these days is just people going, they feel like very excited to leave a mark on a blog somewhere on politics and some subject. So people are kind of divorced from reality. People go on the internet here and there, but they're not going to go in the street. They're going to talk to people and challenge people, because with the ideas that we had, when you go out and you say you're going to impeach the president, first we got a lot of people very curious about that idea, but also an enormous amount of support since we won that seat. Don't want to depress you more.
So the man in Boston should even do better.
Well, we'll see. We'll see, because just to give you maybe, it's an well, it's not an anecdote, but in 1986, the movement, the LaRouche movement inside the Democratic Party won 2 seats in the state of Illinois. We won the nomination, the Democratic nomination for Vice Governor of Illinois and the Secretary of State. And the governor, or the guy who was running for governor as a Democrat, and the Democratic Party completely flipped out, completely went crazy. They said, no, we can't be associated with those people. People voted for them, but they didn't know what they voted for. Again, same argument. And the guy running for the Democratic governor.
Adlai Stevenson?
Huh?
I think it was Adlai Stevenson or something.
Well, his whole family was part of the Democratic Party for a very long time. He was, like, sure to win. But because we were there, they ran as independent, and they lost. They lost Illinois that, like, belonged to the Democrats since, you know, since the Stone Age. So, and that's the problem, because we keep telling people about what's going on, is that there's a revolt in the population. That people are not, it's not the usual politics. We have to realize, and that's what LaRouche said in one of his papers called Akisha's Victory, where not only did he praise the victory that we had, but he made the point that people now were, they were not the same as they used to be. They were open to to much deeper ideas about mankind, about the world, and that we had to organize people from that standpoint. And for example, because now we are in a financial crisis, we've talked about that for a very long time. I'm not going to go through everything, but we've spoken about the crisis in Europe a couple of weeks ago, last week, where they're trying to impose a diktat on the whole European countries, part of the Eurozone. And we've shown that actually it had nothing to do with that. It was actually private banks that were going under. So never mind Greece. These nations are in a big, bad situation, but you're not going to save them by bailing out the banks. You have to do like what we're proposing in the United States. You have to just change the whole system. Maybe even for Europe, even talking about going back to the national currencies. But one thing that came up is that actually what's coming out in the newspapers from like the elite is that actually they're less concerned about what's going on in Europe than what's going on in California. Because California, I don't know if people remember, but California is considered like the 9th or 10th economy in the world. And they have a huge deficit of, I think it's between $50 and $70 billion. And they have Schwarzenegger that, you know, slashes people's head like in his movies, and try to be the, and he's probably convinced that he's some kind of a hero, doing all that cutting, and now the big thing is that after he cut in healthcare, government employees, last time I remember that. People didn't even get a wage, salary. They were getting bonds, government bonds.
IOUs, yeah.
IOUs. So, like, you know, you're getting a bond from the government who's not able to pay you, so it's not a good sign, you know. Okay. But that's Schwarzenegger with, Warren Buffett and Jacob Rothschild. And I'm going to come back to that because... This is in 2002. We actually have, I'll just show it here. In 2002, or 3, I forgot, but I'll just see. Just check the date.
2003.
Well, that's for the campaign.
When LaRouche ran for president in 2004. So we put that pamphlet out because, if you remember, I mean, it was a big scheme as to how he got in, but I'm not going to go into that. If you can, you can download that if you want. But the pamphlet basically explained how California was looted through the Enron scam, how they deregulated the energy system over there, and how Schwarzenegger went to the Rothschild family, you know, had a nice event with Mr. Buffett as well. And they said, okay, you're gonna be the candidate, gonna be the governor. That is the term. So, and today it's still the same thing. You know, after all those years, nothing has really changed except the fact that it's just getting worse and worse. And you have a phenomenon now that started in California, but which is now spreading to about 30 states, which is demonstration against the cuts in the education, because it's already awfully expensive in the United States, but in California, I think over the last year, you had a change of about 30% increase. And now they're going to even make it harder for students to get credit cards. You know, you might think, well, credit cards is not a good thing, but when you pay your study by using credit cards, then you kind of need them. And you need them just to be able to cope, and hopefully when you get a job, you'll be able to pay your $200,000 debt that you owe to private banks. And but this is spreading because, but LaRouche said this is different than some, you know, hippie demonstration where people are just, I don't know, like hugging each other and sharing the love, hoping the love will touch the government somehow. Or but it's actually a very powerful phenomenon which is spreading, and we have to intervene there. The role is to intervene because we have to guide the revolution, because you know, like the reason why we go on campus every day, almost every day, is not because the people that we meet are extremely bright or what they learn at school make them special or something. It's not because of what they learn, because, you know, we don't say that they're like great humanistic students these days, not that many. But it's actually we intervene there before they really get screwed up in the head. because LaRouche has been stressing for decades now the situation that we're in, that we have a systemic crisis. And with any systemic crisis, not just like a physical or financial system, but also a culture which is degrading. And a culture that pretty much tells people that, well, mankind, okay, it's screwed up, things are bad, but it's just mankind. You know, how about polar bears? How about dolphins or pandas? So the idea of putting a certain value on a life, a human life, becomes like optional. Or, you know, you might be considered as some religious kook, pro-life, you know, religious retard who think that human beings are sacred. But and obviously the economic policies reflect that. Which brings me to my other point regarding Haiti. We'll have to do a bit of work here because we know we have a Haitian community which is rather big, but also there was a big conference that occurred, actually ended today, 2 days, huge conference at the École Polytechnique, mm-hmm. where they were talking about different policies for Haiti in terms of rebuilding. So we missed that, but we'll have to follow up on it. There might be some other things coming. It's actually the second. There was another conference end of January. But LaRouche said, he says, look, and we've said many times, the problem there are two problems. The first problem that IT got bashed, you know, for generations, mm-hmm. If people might have heard, but there was recently a earthquake in Chile, which was actually stronger, was 8.8 instead of 7 point something in Haiti. And also there was this, in a few years ago in San Francisco, there was another earthquake, pretty much the same as Haiti. But if you look at the statistics, you know, in San Francisco you had 12 deaths, 12,000 people that lost their home, and about like 5 or 6,000 wounded. If you look at Haiti, it's like more than 250,000 deaths. It's probably the same number in terms of severely injured, and like I think it's 1.something million people with no house.
At the conference at the ICAM, someone said, I don't know how serious it was, that le tremblement de terre in Haiti didn't look like a catastrophe naturelle.
Oh yeah, it was U.S. made. It was done by some machine.
Mm-hmm. Is it true?
Well, I don't know, but I don't want to get into that. But the point is that even if it was just let's say it's nature, okay, because it does happen, and you actually have cycles of earthquake that we're starting to be able to measure and to forecast, but the science is very
shaky.
Very shaky, because it's just hard to figure out. But what LaRouche said is that he says, well, look, never mind the earthquake. What happened before the earthquake is probably worse or as worse as the earthquake, because San Francisco had infrastructure. Chile has more infrastructure than Haiti, so it was much less problematic. And also, people from the U.S. Geological Survey Institute, who made a survey of Haiti, and they said, well, look, everything collapsed except modern buildings, because they were built differently, they were built better, so they stood, or partially stood, the earthquake. And so now, people went there. They people send clothing, money, food, and now nothing was done really, except putting some plasters on people losing their legs and stuff like that. And now people are starting to back away, to leave. The U.S. military is leaving, doctors leaving, and the rainy period is arriving. So you're gonna have already they have problems with malaria over there. And they're saying all the people that went out of the places or the neighborhoods that were destroyed, they said, well, why don't you guys go back now? It's time to go back. Go back to what? So LaRouche says, he says, yes, we're gonna have to help Haiti, seriously. And he's even talking about a contract between the United States and Haiti, saying the United States takes do whatever is necessary to rebuild Haiti, which means infrastructure, and not just humanitarian relief, which is extremely short, which really shows a lack of vision of most people in those institutions that are actually leaving things to possibly get much worse. But we have to shift this mentality of people that says, well, we did what we could. We sent stuff and we were there. We were there for a couple of weeks. Isn't that? No, obviously it's the worst thing you could do. Things are just going to worsen. So we need you need to think in terms of actually the future. Let's say you rebuild IT, and it's important also. That's another point. But what we've shown is that there are attempts to use Haiti as some kind of guinea pigs to a larger policy to be imposed on the African continent, because Haiti there's nothing they can do to defend themselves whatsoever. So there are people coming in there saying stuff like, don't bring machine tools in Haiti, don't bring like these big machines that can cut rocks so that we can get rid of the debris. Just pay people to do it with hammers and how do you call it? A pike? Chisel? Yeah, or a sledgehammer. So and saying that IT, because it lack infrastructure, because it lack all these things, can at least compete with China in terms of cheap labor. So, and these are a serious proposal, even made by a former prime minister of IT, whose name is Michel Pierre-Louis. And she is working now with George Soros, the guy we've exposed. She's in charge of the Asian Reconstruction Program. She said, lumbering machines, they'll do it with sledgehammers and they can, they'll get food, you know, food for work type of thing. We'll pay them with food and some money. And the problem, which brings you back to the United States, but more the question of Obama, is that from our sources, we know that a project was brought forward to the attention of the president regarding the necessity of evacuating about 1 million people from Haiti because of the rainy season and because there's nothing there, we've got to rebuild. So you got to evacuate people in the meantime. And it was received with a big categorical no, we're not going to do that.
Why? Did I give the reason?
Well, beside the financial reason, which is always a good way to escape the issue, because LaRouche says, no, you got to do it. You got to use that to actually rebuild your own Army Corps of Engineer, you know, because that's an Army Corps of Engineer means that these are engineers you can deploy in your own country, also overseas. People that know how to build stuff. That's what we had in the 60s with Kennedy. I don't know if there was a Canadian similar project, but people that can rebuild. People part of the army, but they're not savage, bloodthirsty like Schwarzenegger's characters in movies. But they're people that can build stuff. They can build bridges, they can build roads, can build railroads and these sorts of things. And Obama rejected it, but I mean, we knew that he would reject something like that because his role is really the one of a foreign agent, a British agent more specifically. And LaRouche was critical, saying if you want anything done in terms of this change in the economic situation, also the change in our policies towards poorer countries or countries in general, you'll need to impeach the guy. And I just put together, but whoops. Whoever can read French, we still have copies of that of a newspaper, French newspaper. I don't have it here, but inside the newspaper there is the four, the same thing, but with more details as to why the guy needs to go. So just very quickly, first one is conspiration. In attempting to create crimes against humanity. This we made a dossier regarding, it's pretty much regarding healthcare and the idea of starting to choose who gets the care or not. Same thing that was done in 1939 by Hitler. And what they use is this idea of rapport, I guess the ratio of cost efficiency. So again, you say, well, Grandma is very nice, but if I give her a pacemaker, who knows, she might die next year. So is it worth it? And then, so that's your approach to cutting cost, or even now they're going to start cutting in Medicare. And the people that we talked to, people especially in Texas, it was 82% of the doctors and clinics. We're saying that these cuts are going to affect, in a major way, the care they give up to maybe half of the people that get Medicare, because the doctors won't be reimbursed as they used to. And so we're going to be able to help those people. So that's the first one. It's very serious. It's we publish things on that, because LaRouche is very clear. Whenever we talk about impeachment, it's not a question of I don't like the guy or I think he's bad. It's you need a dossier, you need something serious. Not like getting a blowjob, by some secretary. It's You have to be much more serious than that. Second one, conspiracy in terms of violating the violate the constitutional clause of separation of power. It says here. Separation of power. And that has to do with his here the IMAB, independent medical advisory board, which is the institution that would apply the T4 and the cost efficiency policy. But this institution is outside the government. The Congress and the Senate, there's nothing they can do to change that thing. And the IMAB doesn't have to even look at the Congress. They just do their thing. They only and they can do it forever. There's a clause that says that you're never going to be able to change that. And to create to have a law to create a legislation that creates an entity that is disconnected from the government, like the people that are elected by the population don't have their say. You're going against the Constitution in any country, pretty much. Three. Conspiracy in terms of engaging the United States in a international genocide policy. Well, if you're an ecologist and you have all these ecologists that have a policy for the future, blah, 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 but they're asking the IMF and the World Bank to apply these policies, I mean, there should be a little bell that says, danger, alert. If you ask the IMF and the World Bank to do your policy, I mean, you're really knocking to the wrong door, right? I mean, these guys are known for their conditionalities. They're known to actually destroy nations through debt farming. So, and that's what was going on at Copenhagen, is that there was pretty much an intent to impose financial sanction on developing countries, especially in order to prevent any type of real industrial development, promote depopulation, and just pretty much have the IMF World Bank deciding of these policies and, you know, potentially destroying nations through those sanctions. And four, conspiracy to destroy the sovereignty of the United States. Since the G20 in April, the policy has been policies of bailout, which says that the United States is going to get into debt to save those financial institutions. But more than that, there was also discussions about using the IMF again to generate what's called the special drawing rights. That's a kind of the, you can call it, I guess, the currency of the IMF. It's like every nation kind of chip in and they buy these drawing rights and then the IMF uses them as they wish. And there was a policy adopted to actually engage the IMF into creating much more of these special drawing rights in order to, at a certain point, replace the US dollar. And not that we're like pro-US dollar for some stupid reason, but the US dollar is the basis for international trade. And if you destroy that, the intention is to destroy the dollar by enforcing a destruction of the world economy, and obviously the United States with that. So,
is the U.S. dollar same as the petrodollar?
No, but not quite. But I'm not gonna get not quite clear about as to how it works. So look, we gotta get this guy to go, because if we do that, then what we're going to be attacking by impeaching Obama is what's called the Inter Alpha Group. And that's very important, because this is a group that was formed in 1971, the same year that the Bretton Woods system was destroyed, and also the same year that really shitty policies were imposed on Brazil through the decision making of these this series of banks, which are a series of generally private banks, which work with the Rothschild that we talked about starting in California. Because Because today we have the Brazilian carry trade. Brazil having an oligarchical culture, and oligarchs, they tend to, you know, if they have slaves, they're not really, they can sleep very well at night still. They like slaves. and today, the whole carry trade, which is basically a way to destroy Brazil by forcing Brazil to give back. Whenever you invest a dollar in Brazil, the government gives you back 8 cents, like 8-9%, which is enormous for a country. And the only way they can do that is by keeping their population like super slave labor. And while the whole world, especially Banco Santander, as we documented, is getting involved into that, which is basically a way to make money. You borrow from another country at 1% interest rate, invest in Brazil at 9%, so you get a very quick 8%. But it just shows how stupid and crazy the economy has gotten. You know, don't talk about building a train. Talk about the carry trade that people will be, all the economists will go, yeah, that's a good way to create wealth. But don't talk about rebuilding. That's too expensive. Doesn't bring money very quickly. So that's going to be also, this group has to go. This group is responsible for policies and the dissemination of policies throughout the world that are fascist, that are these monetary policies aiming at the destruction of countries, of the economy of these countries. Because if you go on their website, I mean, the way they define themselves is in a very loose manner. They're just a bunch of guys that get together and decided to share information. Well, as we know with the case of Santander or the Royal Bank of Scotland group, which is directly the British monarchy, well, you know, these guys are not, how do you call that? Just one sec. They're not impartial. That's the word. Can I call you back in 5 minutes? Yeah. No, I'll call you back. It's Peter. So why don't we keep it at that? Maybe take one or two questions, but maybe just end that this victory in the campaign of Keisha Rogers has to be a drive for us to recruit throughout the world, especially here. And I'll just end with that, because in 2007, Mr. LaRouche gave a presentation over the phone to our group in Ottawa. We had some people from the government, embassies, people from the region here in Ottawa. And the way he stressed things is that what he gave to Canada as a as how he saw Canada acting in the coming future was at least very demanding. It wasn't some, you know, hey, you guys can do this, it's going to be easy, or he's actually asking Canada to revive some of the greatest ideas that were endorsed through human development, through the development of human history, starting with the idea of the Treaty of Westphalia, that we can actually break away from free trade, from what it created, by going back to this idea of the advantage of the other. That is that Canada must get Mexico and the United States back into projects where there's going to be a real cooperation based on the coming needs of those nations, including major projects. Because Canada has, you know, we have water, we have resources that we haven't tapped yet. And we're not just going to grab them and grab them from the soil and brag about it, or try to make a buck by selling our uranium or selling oil or coal to those nations that are just begging at our feet. That's what a lot of people would like to do and say, ha, Canada, the greatest economy in the world, we have all these resources. But no, we're going to have to find ways so that people in the Pacific people south of Canada actually partake into, I guess you can call it a sharing of those resources, but in a way to address the future needs of our nation. And we're talking about nuclear, talking about thermonuclear power, and obviously a shitload of infrastructure. I mean, Canada has, like, if you look in terms of the railroads in there, it's like, it's a big joke. It's really, yeah, it's just a bad joke you find in Hollywood movies. It's like, Canada, that many railroads? Wow. And we have to build. We have to rebuild all that stuff. And we've got to get people a sense of this new dynamic that we're shaping, and get people to realize that these ideas are going to have to be the basis for a new North America, but also a new world. And there's the speech is available online on our website. The speech I was given in 2007, which is very straightforward, and but which is, as you'll see, when you start thinking about it, it's not going to be easy to get those ideas through, but we have to. So, yeah, I'm finishing. Maybe is there a question or one or two questions? Otherwise, I'm just going to call Peter and we can start.
Like a kind of a question that would probably take a while to answer. But so you can choose not to answer it. It's okay. You, like several times, well, a big current of what you guys talk about is the group of elites that want to destroy the world economy. Why would anyone want to destroy the world economy? Most of all, the elites who make all their money from it.
Well, think about an empire. The problem with an empire is that they're limited. There's always a point where they're going to collapse. In different ways, right? Like the Romans, they say, well, the Romans spread too much, so they collapsed. But there's a problem. The reason why empires don't really build stuff, or actually, like, there's like this this mentality of, you know, one kingdom against the other. It's like a continuous system of wars, whether they're religious or whatever the excuse is. The problem is that those systems are not viable. So the so-called elite, that's what Lewis has been saying. Those elite right now are bankrupt. They're a game, whether it's derivatives or just conditionalities from the IMF or privatization, these sorts of things. This system is coming to an end. That's why there's a panic from these guys saying, no, let's bail out the system. The United States, use the Federal Reserve, print all that money, give it to those financiers. And same thing in Europe, right? They're saying, okay, Greece, we're going to hit you in the back of the head, but you're going to be our guinea pig, and we're going to actually impose those policies throughout Europe. And that, after, but you heard, you saw that in the newspaper when they were talking about Greece?
Yeah.
No? Okay.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yes, sorry. But right after that, or in the same time, there were many conferences at the European Commission. And that's what people were saying. They were even saying that we need an imperial system, because imperialism are better to rule a certain broad region like the Eurozone. But they were directly saying we're going to have to cut the development of those nations to actually bring more liquidity into the system. So yes, they're dangerous. Yes, they're crazy. They have still powers, but the power they have is based on the fact that there's too many people that just think that they're too powerful, and that there's nothing you can do, which is, I guess, the main. There's nothing you can do. They're always going to be ruling. You know, there's always, you know, remember the Roman Empire, it never disappeared. So there's a very pessimistic view of the future. And people will give too much power to those people, especially now. These guys are collapsing.
Yeah, it's important to remember too that these guys, unlike the populist idea of what an empire stands for and what drives it, is that it's profit motive. Like what really governs an empire's motivation is not profit, it's ideologically driven. And so there is an ideological belief, like a cultish dogmatic worldview that goes with empire, of this idea of an absolute fixed type of universe that doesn't change. Where, you know, you have people born slaves, certain people born masters, and a certain, like, fixed structure that has to be maintained at all costs. And things that we're dealing with now with the newest incarnations since the British Empire have been more dominant and monetarist systems taking the form of free trade and other things that are used as tools to enforce the ideology of a fixed universe of no change, where, you know, the talking cows know their role. And in that world where you have ideas like, you know, like what LaRouche has talked about in terms of physical economy, you're dealing with the fact that human beings are distinguished from animals because we make creative breakthroughs into how the universe works that manifests in the form of political freedom, technological freedom, you know, things that cause us, that have the effect of an increase of our quality and quantity of people on the planet. So when an oligarch sees that and new ideas are being introduced, like, oh, all men are created equal, it completely breaks their structure, their power hold. So it's there's an ideology, though, governing this thing. It's not profit motive. That's the key thing to get away from.
Basically, yes, why would these people in power want to bring down the system? But the answer is they don't want to bring it down. They want to keep it in place. That's what you asked, no? Why would those people in power want to bring down a system that makes them money? Well, that's what you asked. So
yeah,
basically
right.
The answer is they're not trying to bring it down, they're trying to build it out. The system is collapsing by itself.
Yeah, so you get to a point where nations are being much asked to go bankrupt for these networks. So, but people like in the United States are saying, no, that's not going to happen. We're actually going to fight back. So then you get this fight, and you still need people with balls. It's not going to be, we're not saying that, like, we just have to laugh at them and then they're going to go away. But we're in a position where their system is collapsing. We know it. And now we're pushing for a real system of nation states collaborating for development, like it did happen in the past.
No, name me one example if you can.
Well, you can just look at the famous Treaty of Westphalia, 1648. Despite the fact that there were still certain wars, the French helped develop the Germans. There was a major project of canalization, and the French, I mean, they could have kept the same mentality of saying, we're just going to bust you up because you're small and you're screwed up anyway. But no, they went there and they said, okay, what do you need? And the German states were, it was very divided. It was a bunch of little things. But this canalization project helped gather these, you know, like change. Because if every little state has their own taxation, you know, you bring your boat and you get to the end, it's like super expensive. So you have formalization of the tariffs, the money policy. But this was done through those projects. And France didn't have to do it. But they did it because they were... It was something that was done by certain leaders. It wasn't everybody. But the idea of the Treaty of Westphalia was the idea that each nation had to take care of their neighbors instead of always fighting, trying to grab the other guy and expand your kingdom. It was a new idea. It's misunderstood today, because when you mention Treaty of Westphalia, they just talk about sovereignty. They say, oh, that's when they decided that the borders were the most important thing. Well, not really. It was part of it. But the idea was to change the mentality, to change the European culture, saying, you know, might is right, yet. Yeah. Might is right, had to go. Get rid of that. Doesn't work. So get rid of that. But this was a conspiracy made by a few people, especially in France. Took a lot. It took a while. It took about 9 years of discussions among countries. That's long.
Yeah.
But, and even, I mean, it was messy, but it did work. Not that it was perfect, but it's something that was, people could go back to. To develop Europe or the United States or these other places, because it works, versus an imperial system based on might is right, where the only thing you're gonna get is chaos. It might last a while.
You're the strongest, it works for you.
Well, yeah, and it might last a very long time, like we see with the Romans and other empire, but it's systemically flawed. While the Treaty of Westphalia brought an idea that does work, even if you don't like it, that if you develop. If Canada says, that let's help the United States and let's help Mexico, like really, despite the money spending, whatever, you're going to have a real growth, a real political and economic growth in that region, where you can have a huge block of development that then can be an example for the whole world. And that's how things work. It's always better to help your neighbor. Might sound cheesy, but
no, this
it
is
does
the truth,
work.
But the neighbor won't help you.
Oh yeah, that even sometimes the neighbor don't want to talk to you. So you still got to be patient, but you keep the same approach. Because sometimes it's not the nation. Like I don't think any Canadian should have any hatred towards an American citizen. Obama, the leaders, okay, they're screwed up, they're fucked up, but the population. So if you keep that in mind, then you're gonna get to the right people. You're gonna start building something which can work. So
you guys know who Peter is?
No.
Well, you're about to find out.
Okay, so what's your Skype name?
No, he's a member of the basement team from Virginia.
Is that three or four? The third.
And he usually knows how to bring about some good ideas into the picture, so that we can. We can see what they're working on, because LaRouche is giving all these interesting projects to, like, in a sense, pose the right questions. What are the paradoxes that we're facing that we have to resolve? And we're gonna break out of these ideas, which is in a way has trapped scientists into a box. How do we break out of that into the future? How do we go to Mars? I don't know exactly what he's going to be talking about, but
what do scientists have to do with what you're talking about here? This is all political, so.
How is that political?
Like, what do scientists have to do with this?
We're going to call you.
Well, the question is, I guess, how do you...
Hello?
Oh, hi.
Can you hear us?
I am.
Oh.
Can you see me? I've got the webcam hooked up. I'm not sure if it works.
Okay, so far no.
You know how I... Well, this hold on a second. Let me see if I can get this thing hooked up. Do you guys know? Well, yeah. Is it alright if I just do it over the audio like this?
I guess.
Unless you guys got. Is there like a thing that I click on in Skype that turns on the camera?
I don't find mine too. The thing is, when you start the call, you have to make it a video call.
Mm. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Alright, yeah.
Okay. There's no video call option. It's like small. his address? He's not connected.
Why am I setting them up? They're just me all in for Tokyo. That's not bad. Damn. Hello, Peter.
Hello.
Hey. Hey, there you are.
There you go.
All right.
Great.
Hold on. You guys can see me?
Yep.